You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley and Stevie Nicol. What should we start with today, gentlemen? It was, of course, the interview that dropped as we were live on yesterday's show. Cristiano Ronaldo pulling no punches, talking about his relationship or lack of with Manchester United, and in particular, the manager Ten Hag. I don't have respect for him because he doesn't show respect for me. If you don't have respect for me, I'm never going to have respect for you. Not only the manager, but the other two or three guys who are around the club. I don't care. People should listen to the truth. Yes, I feel betrayed. I feel that some people didn't want me here, not only this year, but last season too. For more on this, let's welcome in, shall we, Frank LaBeouf and Mark Ogden. But a lot of people, Craig, texted me saying, make sure you ask Craig what he thinks about all of this, as if I wasn't going to ask you.
Well, we're all going to talk about it. Everybody's talking about it, but I don't think there could have been a more perfect end to this break before the World Cup for Erik ten Hag than this. He picks up 3 points in a hard-fought match at Fulham with a teenager scoring the winner, the future of the game, all the youngsters are, and this interview drops, leaving, if there was any need for clarification for him or the club or the owners, clarification that Ronaldo had hammered his final nail in his Manchester United coffin, then Erik ten Hag's the big winner here, because if he needed any backing, he can just go to the club now and say, cannot. I mean, he might have been leaving in January anyway. The chances are he may have. Mm. Cannot have, when the World Cup finishes, cannot have this guy anywhere near this dressing room, anywhere near this training ground, anywhere near this club, because he's now become a cancer within the squad. He's played Erik ten Hag's cards for him.
Your reaction, Stevie, when you heard this interview?
I've got to say that as good as Ronaldo's been on the field, I've always respected the way he behaved off it. I've always respected that every person that he's played with had nothing but good things to say about him as a person, the way he trained. You know, every single thing that he's ever done has been pretty much perfect, and he's been the type of guy and the type of footballer that if you've got any kids, you say, you know what, you'd be like this guy. This is the guy you want to look up to. And I've always said it, it's really easy when things are going well for you. You're bringing in hundreds of millions of pounds a year, you're scoring loads of goals, not only goals, but winning goals. Everybody loves you. The profession loves you for the way you play on the field and the way you act. But you know what? When things get tough, this is when you see what people are really made of. And what he's shown us right now is the complete opposite of what we saw throughout his career. He's turning himself into... We all thought he was me, me, me. Well, I tell you what, you talk about not taking responsibility, try to push all the blame on everybody else. It's Ten Hag's fault. Yeah. It's the board's fault. It's not my fault. So it's not your fault that you haven't been able to hit a barn door from 3 yards since you went to Manchester United. This is absolutely about him, and it's about the millions of followers that he has on social media who probably don't know much about football and will still follow him. Anybody, almost everybody that's ever been involved in the game, whether it's playing, coaching, you name it, will be looking at this and shaking their head and saying, come on, this is something you do not do. And he's crossed the line big time, and he's doing it, and he's completely ruining his reputation.
Frank?
Yeah, I agree with Stevie, and also, I felt the same, you know, about this article. I said, what is he looking for, in fact? What does he want? What good could come out from this article? Nothing good, because you know, we are pundit. We see, we've been former players. We know how football works, and we see what Ronaldo brought to the world of football and what he did it during his career and what he's capable of doing now on the field. And we know that he's not the same. So you know that you have to go to the exit of your career, you know, slowly but surely, and making sure that your respect will come over your career. He's on his own destroying everything, or almost everything, because of the comment that he's just making. And I agree with Stevie. It's only about me, and what's going wrong with me, and why they don't love me, and I'm gonna make them pay for what they're doing to me. I remember loving more Messi than Ronaldo. And I read an article about Ronaldo, 4 pages on France Football, that he explained his life and how he was working and everything. And I had to change my mind. Well, I put them in the same spot. But because of what he's doing right now, comparing what we see with Messi, we had a very tough season last season. You know, I don't follow the guy. I can't follow the guy because he's not doing what he has to do to end his career. And the end of your career is part of your career. Yeah, he had a good career, but at the end he destroyed everything. So hopefully he's going to find a good way out. He's going to find maybe another end of a career with another club, and he's going to be fine. But what he does right now, I don't know if people can support that. I'm not supporting that.
Mark, how is this being received by the Manchester United supporters?
I think pretty much, I'd say 99% of the United fans are with Eric Ten Hag on this. I think they've all lost patience with Ronaldo. They're sick of hearing the usual kind of, it's Ten Hag's fault, it's the club's fault, the club's trying to force me out. You know, the players don't like this or that. I think they're sick of the excuses. And I think, you know, Ronaldo, until recently, was a massively popular figure at United. There's a real love and affection for him. And I think that he's done well to kind of demolish that in the space of a few weeks. But I think Ten Hag has handled it brilliantly. And I think what the fans like about Ten Hag is that he's done that. He's been strong. He's dealt with it. And not only that, he's actually, for the first time in maybe 10 years, Ten Hag is showing the signs that he's actually a manager that can put Man United back on track again. So I think the fans think that Ten Hag is, in some respects, like the saviour. So he is now a more popular figure than Cristiano Ronaldo. So if Cristiano Ronaldo's done anything, he's done that. He's made himself less popular than the manager. And I think he said a lot of things in this interview. And I think I've got to be fair on this. I think there are some elements that he's probably right. You know, I think he was sold a bit of a false promise when he went back to United, and he walked back to a club that was completely different to when he left. And, you know, he was expecting the club to challenge for trophies and challenge for the Premier League. That was probably naive, considering where United were at the time. But, you know, to complain about the state of Carrington, the training ground, fair point. He's been left in neglect. To complain about the owners and the Glazers, saying it's a commercial club, he has a point. But Cristiano Ronaldo knew about the Glazers before he left Real Madrid and Juventus to go back to United. He was there under the Glazers the first time around. And nobody can criticise a club for being commercially driven like Cristiano Ronaldo, because his career has been based on maximising the commercial, you know, value of his playing career. He's been a fantastic player, but he knows how to exploit a commercial brand. So he can't criticise the Glazers for doing that. But ultimately, what he's been saying about Ten Hag and the team is just totally out of order, because Ten Hag's handled him brilliantly. To say he's disrespected him, he made him captain 2 weeks ago. He actually made him captain for what is probably going to be his last ever appearance in a Man United shirt. United lost 5 games this season, and Ronaldo started 4. The other one was Man City away, and they probably would have lost it anyway. So Ronaldo now is a liability at Man United. I've been speaking to people at the club today, and they say, look at his stats. His stats show you that when he plays, the team play worse. The team, you know, they lack something when Ronaldo plays. He's not the player he was 3, 4, 5 years ago. He can't run. He doesn't press. Doesn't score goals anymore. He's only scored 3 goals all season. 2 were against Sheriff in the Europa League. So he isn't what he was. He's gone off a cliff so fast, it's unbelievable. And I think that is the root of this. He's so frustrated at what he can't do anymore. He's talking about what he wants to do off the pitch rather than doing it on the pitch. And this season, it's always about Ronaldo for the wrong reasons. Storming out of the ground before the end of the game against Tottenham. Storming out of the ground before the end of the game against Vallecano. And now this, you know, going on air to criticise the club when they've just come off the back of one of the best wins of the season at Fulham. A guy that scored a goal, Garnacho, a Ronaldo-style goal in the last minute of the game. Man United won without Ronaldo at the weekend. They're moving on without Ronaldo, and he can't handle it.
We said that a few weeks ago. It's just United have not played as well when he's been in the team. But if you go back, you know, we talked a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, I said here, he's not the story anymore. He's not the story on the field. He knew he wasn't the story on the field, so he's made it the story. He's made it the story in terms of everybody's talking about him. But let's be frank about it. And Mark touched on this. When he talked about, one of the things he talked about was the evolution of the club when Sir Alex left. He's right about that. But as Mark said, he knew about that. Now, I presume he's quite a bright guy. I don't know him, but I'm presuming he's a bright guy. So he should have been bright enough to know it was amateurs making recruitment decisions and bad ones, right? So he should have known that. It was amateurs making managerial decisions, i.e. the appointment of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, who should never have been there. And maybe that was part of the reason that Ronaldo went back to Man United, because Solskjaer was so weak and soft that he could manipulate that situation, whereas he can't manipulate this guy who's got a better CV, who's got a proven track record as a manager, and who will make big decisions. And one of those big decisions is to decide that Cristiano Ronaldo is a squad player, and he can't handle it. Mm. He can't handle it. He's had 2 decades of praise. He's had 2 decades of praise, and he cannot handle the fact that he's just a bit part on the side of a pretty average football team. Not even Man City, not Arsenal, not any of the guys that are the teams that are going to be fighting for the top. He can't handle the fact that he is now a squad player at Man United. And quite frankly, it can't have worked out any better for Erik ten Hag. I'm sure Erik ten Hag sitting back in Manchester or wherever couldn't give a stuff. He wants him out. They all want him out.
Yeah.
They all want him out. And here's the problem, right? Here's the problem. In February, Cristiano Ronaldo turns 38. Now, he might get a move in January, just before he turns 38. But who the hell out there in the managerial world at the moment wants a 38-year-old problem?
Yeah.
And that's what he is. Because if he goes somewhere and he doesn't play, then the same actions will take place and managers will get thrown under the bus.
I just want to piggyback on that to Mark. If people didn't want him in the summer after he was top scorer, why would they want him now, Mark?
Well, this is one thing that we need to get straight on Ronaldo, and I think that it's been lost a little bit. Cristiano Ronaldo has been available on a free transfer since the summer. People at United have told me that they were ready to let him go on a free transfer, no takers. Nobody was interested. He has £500,000 a week. Like Craig said, he's 38 in February. He hasn't scored any. He scored 3 goals all season. Doesn't create many goals. Like Craig says, why would you bring in a problem? Why would you add a divisive character to your dressing room? So there were no takers then. And unless there's a club in the Champions League that is desperate for a striker, there isn't one right now, there's nowhere for him to go. I think all he's hoping for is he has a good World Cup, he scores a couple of goals in the World Cup, does well, and also a big player, a big striker, maybe gets injured and the club that employs him needs somebody to come in. But even then, if you're a Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, one of these big clubs that might need a striker, you're not going to bring in Ronaldo because he's going to upset all the stars you've got anyway. So he's basically looking at Saudi Arabia, Qatar, maybe MLS. I'm not sure if MLS works for Ronaldo. I don't know. But, that is what he's looking at. That is the sum total of Cristiano Ronaldo's career now, what remains. And it won't appeal to him. But equally, United have got a problem in the sense that they want him out and they can't get rid. So they may have to cancel his contract, which ultimately makes him the winner. Because that is what he's playing for now. That is what he's trying to do. He's trying to make himself unemployable. He's trying to get sacked, basically. And Man United, like they sacked Roy Keane back in 2005, they terminated his contract, and they get into a situation where this might have to happen with Ronaldo. But by doing so, in many ways, Man United are allowing Cristiano Ronaldo to win. And maybe it's just boiled down to that now. It's a battle of egos between Cristiano Ronaldo and the Glazers. They don't want him to win, and equally, he doesn't want to stick around. But, this is where we're at.
The headline's great, isn't it? He feels betrayed by Man United. I would suggest that he's the one that's betrayed them. He's betrayed them on the field with 3 goals, 2 of them against Sheriff in 16 games. And what he's just done in this interview has betrayed Manchester United. So I think the betrayal actually has gone the other way.
Now, he did, to be fair to him, he did score a lot of goals last year.
Yeah.
But Erik ten Hag wasn't there. And Erik ten Hag is, like everybody else, an employee of Manchester United. He's an employee to make big decisions, as Augie touched on. And he's already shown, not that it comes as a surprise, because I think we all sort of knew he was prepared for that, that he's made the big decisions. And the big decision is the future going forward does not involve this guy on a regular basis. Now then you ask the question, how is he going to handle this? You're now part of this squad. We have quite a few young players. You can play a part in helping us make this evolution. And he's clearly shown that he's not willing to do that. Now, the apology from the other week now just seems so thinly veiled. It's quite scary when he trotted off. Let's be honest, this is nothing more than a football... This is nothing more than a football betrayal, right? This is only because he's not the main man, it's only because he's not in the first 11, and it's only because he's sitting on the bench watching this team perform. It's nothing else. It's nothing else. He knew, as Mark said, how the Glazers run the ship. He knew already who was manager when he came to the club. There's nothing new. He should never have gone back there in the first place. That's the bottom line. I mean, if he thought single-handedly at 35, 36, whatever it was when he went back, he could turn this ship around, come on, it's never going to happen.
Was there an olive branch then to give him the captaincy for the Villa game? What was the thinking there behind Ten Hag?
Well, I think if you're Ten Hag, you're trying to figure out, while the guy's in the building, you know, we need to have him pushing in the right direction. Maybe not full steam ahead, but at least pushing for the players that he's in the dressing room with and for the club that's given him a lot. And so, I don't think anybody had a problem with it. You know, he slapped him on the wrist, but you talk about showing respect. That's absolutely what Ten Hag did.
Right.
He showed Ronaldo respect by giving him that armband. And, of course, we've seen exactly what he's done with it. But that's the reason behind that. The guy's in the building, so let's try, without embarrassing ourselves and without looking weak, let's try and get him on board. But he's not... He doesn't want it, as Craig said. He's not interested in it. It's him or nothing.
If I'm the manager now, I'm saying to my owners, I don't care what happens at the World Cup. Right, it's not my problem.
Yeah.
Right, it's your problem now. You need to deal with it. I don't care if he leaves in January or he stays in January. I don't care if you sack him and give him his money or you pay him off. I don't care. I just don't want him around the place.
Yeah.
Right, I don't want him there. I don't care how you deal with it. As an ownership, the financial side of it, you go and deal with it. Whether it be selling him to another, letting him go to another club, telling him he can... I just don't want him around the place. So however you deal with it as owners, then deal with it. But we cannot have him around from a squad perspective. And I don't really see how the owners have any alternative other than to back the manager here.
Yeah, they can't push against that. I mean, you just can't have the guy near the building.
Right.
Otherwise, you're jeopardising everyone at Ten Hag's building.
To that point, Frank, is there a kind of collective sigh of relief from the players now within the squad in that you don't have to deal with that distraction anymore?
Well, it will be the best for everybody. And it's true that the players are very focused on what they have to do on the field, you know, in the dressing room. They find a way to play. They find a way to win. They find a spirit, especially for the last game where they scored the last second of the game. So they want to be away from it, and they would be better for them if Ronaldo is completely ejected to the dressing room for the best of everyone. The players don't want to deal with that. They don't care with that, even if it's Ronaldo. And it's and we have to think about that. We are talking about Ronaldo. We're talking about somebody who for two decades, for 20 years, you know, offered something spectacular to the football. We are talking somebody who nobody wants anymore. And being trashed by almost everybody, but for the right reason, because he put that out of the dressing room and explained everything that he wanted to explain. But Ten Hag has the right and did everything right, you know, since he arrived with him. Tried to play him, tried to captaincy him, tried to do everything about him. It didn't work. For the other players, you know, I think they're fed up with that. They want to see a bright future with young players, and they don't want any problems around the gym. They're fed up with that because they want to talk about football and they don't just want to read about football and not problems.
What happens then after the World Cup, Mark? Is it just like a blanket ban from him coming anywhere near Carrington? How do you imagine United are going to play this?
Well, I've made the mistake this year twice saying he's played his last game for United, so I think we better be wary of that. But I do think that it's more likely that he won't come back. But Ten Hag has been pragmatic on this all the way through. I think he was happy to let him go in the summer, but when he came back, he realised that he hasn't got a striker. He hasn't got a guy he can rely upon to score goals. You know, Marcus Rashford, Anthony Martial, they're not guys you can hang your hat on to score 20 goals a season. So he felt that if you keep Ronaldo on side, keep him happy, if he scores 10, 15 goals a season, he solves the problem for you. And they were kind of hoping to get through to the end of the season, end of his contract, with Ronaldo chipping in with maybe 10 goals and just alleviating that pressure on players that, you know, he doesn't trust Rashford or Martial to score the goals, and I don't blame him. So the idea that he could see out to the end of the season, I think he's evaporating because he's causing so much trouble. So I think United will hope that he does well enough at the World Cup to convince, persuade, you know, even lull somebody into a false sense of kind of security and think that he can do a job for them. But I think that's unlikely. I think the Glazers are going to have to make a big decision because if Ten Hag wants him out, they have to back Ten Hag. They're just going to have to pay him up. They're going to have to say to him, look, your contract is cancelled. They are consulting the legal advisors, and maybe there's a way they can terminate his contracts, maybe through gross misconduct or something like that, because I think he has gone way beyond what most players have done. He's defied the club. He's betrayed the club, like Stevie says with his interview. He said some incredible things that, you know, maybe classed as gross misconduct. So perhaps they're looking at that, but I think it's really hard to see him come back at United now, despite Ten Hag's pragmatism and everything else. I think they have to let him out of the club because, you know, when Keane went, when Ruud van Nistelrooy went, all these players that became a problem, the mood lifted and the atmosphere lifted at Old Trafford, and it happens at all the clubs. If you get a big problem player out of the club, it does make a positive difference, and that's what United need right now. But the problem is, they haven't got a goal scorer, so I can see why Ten Hag was being pragmatic, but Ronaldo isn't scoring goals anymore, so there's no reason to keep him now.
I get this. I just keep this thing in my head that there's a guy in West London who thinks he knows a fair bit. I don't know why. I keep going back.
He's going to be in a Chelsea shirt.
Well, I don't know if he's going to be in a Chelsea shirt, but I think had Thomas Tuchel not sort of shot Todd Bowley down, there was a chance he could have been there in the summer.
Exactly now, what Potter needs at the moment.
The last thing Graham Potter needs, who's getting a bit of a baseball bat over his head at the moment for recent results and performances, is this problem on his doorstep, right? Now, I would not be surprised, and I have no inside knowledge on this whatsoever, but I would have no surprise to me if Graham Potter's taking phone calls from people at Chelsea who think they know more, trying to drop a superstar in to say, look what we've done. And I'm just throwing it out there. I would not be surprised. Now, I don't think for a minute Graham Potter would want him anywhere near the place.
No.
However, he has owners who think they know a lot about this sport.
But the thing is, with Ronaldo doing this, not only are we talking about it's making Ten Hag look good. If that thought is there, it's helping Graham Potter say, hold on a second.
Right.
You really want a guy like this when we don't even know? He hasn't done it so far. And we don't know whether he can still do it, but he also brings this with him. Now, come on. So he's done Potter a favour as well.
Frank, shorter term, does this affect Portugal at all going into the World Cup? And Ronaldo is so hell-bent on showing everybody that he's still the greatest player in the world, it could actually spoil their chances.
Well, I think the Portugal nation and even the players, they just pray for the renaissance of Ronaldo in terms of football. They don't care about the rest. They want him to be good and to provide what they are looking for, meaning the performances. Otherwise, they don't care. We'll see that after. The players, the national team players, they know that Ronaldo is the number one and he has to play. He's going to be the captain. So they just hope that he's going to be good. Remember the final of the European Championship. People are saying that because Ronaldo got injured, it's why they found a spirit and they won against France in France. Is it true or not? We'll never know. But players, again, are praying just for Ronaldo to be good because they know he's going to play. That's it's going to be only the question mark, will he be good or not?
But in all fairness to him, I mean, I don't know exactly, but he's got well over 100 caps. He's always turned up for his country, right?
Very much so, yeah.
So he's scored a lot of goals. However, it has never been more than about him, has it, really? This World Cup, as Augie mentioned, is about him. It's his kind of salvation to potentially get this move somewhere where there's not been a lot of suitors. And now this huge storyline appears on the eve of a World Cup. And he needs to do something to try and take the narrative away from the sort of spoiled little brat to the footballer. And he can only do that by being served by these... Now, you know, we talked about one of the last Man United games. It did look like it might have been the Villa game at Villa Park. It looked like they were trying to find him all the time. Is that detrimental to the team?
Right.
And so these questions are out there. Is this about Portugal having a great World Cup? Or is this about Ronaldo having a great World Cup? Where does that importance sit for him? Bearing in mind, as we speak, he's pretty much got no club to play for.
It's always been about him, though, isn't it, with Portugal? So it's kind of normal.
But never more so. But it's,
I know, but it's kind of normal for them to turn up. And regardless of who you are, I mean, if you're João Felix, you've just went for 120 mil. Mm-hmm. But when you turn up for Portugal the next day, you know it's going to be about that guy. So is it really going to change anything for Portugal? I don't see how it changes anything for Portugal.
No, but my point is previously, he's always been the big player at the club who goes to Portugal. Now he's not. Now he's searching for that next club whilst being the big I am at Portugal. How much does that take away from the team now? The fact that his desperation to get X amount of goals and be talked about at this World Cup to get the move, he hasn't been in that position before. He's never needed the move before, because the moves always came to him. Now he's looking for that. So it'll be interesting to see what the dynamic is come this World Cup. Particularly if he gets dropped, by the way. If
good luck.
Good luck with that.
No, that's not happening.
That would be something special. So there were two major soccer topics that were trending on Twitter today. The first being Cristiano Ronaldo. The second being Ashton United. I don't know if you saw this story as it was developing. Basically, Ashton United ply their trade in the non-league in England, which is the fifth tier of football. And they put in a bid to take Erling Haaland on loan. This is what Michael Clegg, the manager, had to say. It just makes sense. City aren't playing. We want to help by keeping Erling fit. It makes more sense than playing golf for 6 weeks. We think he'll be a great fit for us and would slot in with our squad dynamic really well.
To be honest with you, Dan, I wouldn't take him the way he played on Saturday.
No,
I'm going
to get the starting 11.
he was never off his backside. Who wants to sign him after? But yeah, I mean,
isn't that brilliant? I loved it. I thought it was a fantastic story that they obviously put this in tongue in cheek, Stevie. Would he get more goals or more people kicking him?
Well, they'd have to catch him to kick him. Let's be honest.
That's true.
Yeah, no, I don't think he would. I'm going to guess he wouldn't fancy it.
No, I don't think Pep Guardiola would fancy it either. As we thank you very much to Mark Ogden for joining us for a lot more reaction on the Cristiano Ronaldo interview. Be sure to check out the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That's available now over on the website.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast.
Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com.
Also on the website, of course, every Monday, Dale Johnson breaks down all the big...
Oh, he's changed.
He's aged badly, Dale. Goodness, why is he dressed as a geography teacher? You can check out him breaking down some of the big refereeing decisions over on our website as we welcome in. Mark Clattenburg is with us.
It's all dressed up, isn't it?
He is all dressed up.
I know what's happening.
He's just been looking at his watch going, oh, he's still talking about Ronaldo. Come on. I've got a bed to go to. Let's talk about the Tottenham opening goal, shall we, in that incredible match against Leeds, Mark. This is one of those situations where I don't think we can find anyone, can we, who thinks that the referee got this one right.
Yeah, no, the referee got this one wrong. But what's interesting is normally the referee's position at a corner kick is on the opposite side. Mm-hmm. He's standing in a very unusual position and all the players are blocking his view. And what you do see is, as the goalkeeper jumps, the attacker puts his arm across, which stops him jumping further. And yes, even though the goalkeeper's got a punch on it, there's a clear contact which pushes the goalkeeper inside the goal. And for me, this is a clear foul. And this is where the frustration lies. Because the referee doesn't give it, the VAR, because it's not a clear and obvious error, allegedly, the VAR doesn't interfere. And I think this is what the frustration factor is, why the VAR doesn't get involved. Yeah.
I'm going to get those two words taken out of the dictionary. We have to put that forward. We have to put a motion forward to get clear and obvious.
Just out of the dictionary completely. Yeah. Because that's not allowed to be used in any conversation.
Because that is. But there was one person, and he was a goalkeeper.
Right, yes.
An ex-goalkeeper thought it wasn't a foul.
Let's just have a look at it. Get rid of the stupid two words.
Right.
And say... The goalie's ended up in the back of his own net. How did that happen? Yeah, Why don't we have a little look? They would have looked at it.
They would have seen what you've seen and come to the conclusion that it wasn't egregious enough.
I mean, it's a double team.
So they need to change the rules then to get rid of that.
Oh, come on, Steve. It doesn't matter what the rules are. You've got to go in there. You've got to
Hold on. We're dealing with referees here.
Yeah.
Referees are pernickety. Right. If it says you can't touch it, then they won't touch it.
Right.
And so that's what Mark's just said. The VAR can't get involved.
Well, it can get involved. It depends where they think the bar is.
Just said they can't get involved because it's not clear and obvious.
Oh, yes, but it's then, well, how do you define clear and obvious?
No, listen.
That's what I'm telling you. They're officials. They're officious. That's what they're like.
Oh, listen, surely here.
Oh, we can't. Somebody might go, hey, by the way, you should. No, we can't. We're not allowed to get involved.
You can't get involved. Why are we sat here looking at the TV?
So why is he saying it's not clear and obvious and they won't get involved?
He's saying that's what they interpret it should be. It's the human interpretation, isn't it?
No, listen. Surely to God, the common sense approach here is for VAR to go in the referee's ear and say, listen, there is a clear and obvious foul here. You've just missed it.
You just used that word.
No, but you've missed the incident because you're watching so many things in the penalty area in the six-yard box when a ball comes in. You've basically missed Longley and Richarlison bundling into the goalkeeper. It's a clear foul. There's no doubt about it. Job done. That's not difficult, is it?
It shouldn't be.
Frank, what do you want to say, mate?
I want to say, of course, that VAR should have show themselves and show up and say what they asked to say. But Mark says something very important. Now we know that even some referees don't even know where they have to position themselves in corner kicks. And that's absolutely crazy for me, an unprofessional, to see a referee being in that position where, as Mark explained, you have to have an open space, an open view, so you go on the other side of where the corner kick is kicked. And the guy was in a very blinding situation, so he couldn't see anything. But if they don't even know that, you know, that's almost the end of it. That, for me, that's the end of it.
Why is he there, Mark? That seems to be kind of basic refereeing, isn't it? For a corner, you just stand here for the best view.
Yeah, but sometimes, wait, for most of the time, referees will look at tactics. However, he probably thinks the ball's going towards the near post, so probably that's why he's took that position. But like Frank said, as a referee, if he'd come to the other side of the penalty area where they normally stand, he would have clearly seen the arm going into the goalkeeper. So from that position where he was, he can't see anything. And actually, when you do freeze frame it, he's actually blocked by about four or five players.
Let's stick to the same game, shall we? The challenge from Rocker on Eric Dier. Should this have been a straight red, Mark?
I think it is a red card. And what I do see is when the player comes in, he has a quick look at Dier, and then he comes over the top, studs above, like, close to the knee, probably just below the knee. And for me, this is clearly endangering the safety of the opponent. And for me, this is a red card. But what were the key signs for me was he clearly looked at Eric Dier as he was going into challenge for the ball. The foot was high. And for me, this ticks all the boxes for serious foul play.
It was a bit like Lewandowski in one of the Barcelona games recently. He was sent off. It wasn't a high boot, but it was a looking.
Yes.
Same thing, looking at the player before he made the contact. It was a shoulder on the face. And when you see this one, it completely falls under the guidelines of serious foul play, endangering an opponent. Yeah, I agree. It should have been a red card.
I'm all right with a yellow. I don't think he follows through.
Oh, my God.
I don't think he follows through. You know, he sees him right at the last second because he's got his eyes on the balls all the way through.
No.
And he doesn't. I don't think he follows through. You know, it's
no,
it's more of a lazy leg to me. He doesn't follow through.
Stevie, he's looking at the guy. He's looking at Dier before.
He looks at
kicking.
Him right at the end.
No. In the middle, if we have the first action and the first view of the action, it goes on the left. It goes really looking like, say, okay, the ball is here. The ball is coming here. The player is coming here. I'm going to kick him. That's what I see. It's a clear red card for me because I feel, and Mark and Craig as well, we feel that it goes for it. It doesn't go for the ball. It goes for it.
Had he got a red, right, I wouldn't be arguing black and white. It's not a red. I'm just saying I think I'm okay with that yellow. You know, I don't think we should be going around looking to send people off. I think you should give people the benefit of the doubt. And in my opinion, I think a yellow card's okay there.
I think if he had been... even if we debate whether he was trying to play the ball or not, even if I think it's clear he's trying to play the ball, I think it's still a high enough challenge that it could be a red card.
And what about Stevie's point that he's not following through?
I think that's more luck than judgment, really, in terms of where Eric Dier ended up planting his leg. I mean, it's one of those challenges where if it's close to, like, if Eric Dier plants those studs, he's so high that it's a straight leg, knee completely gone.
Right.
I think it's just dangerous, to be honest. Unfortunate, but reckless.
No.
I mean, I'm not saying he's intent to injure the player, but for me, just my opinion, I think it's reckless.
That game, of course, was quite something as Spurs would win by 4-3 in the end. The biggest surprise, no doubt about it, was, of course, City losing at home against Brentford. But should Pep Guardiola's side have had a penalty for a challenge on Kevin De Bruyne? What did you make of this, Mark?
This will create massive debates. I think it's a penalty because the defender steps across with his leg and catches Kevin De Bruyne on the knee. So for me, I can say that it's a penalty. However, I think it's one of these that just stays on the pitch. If the referee gives it, the VAR should support it. But as the referee didn't give it, I think the VAR should support it. I think it's one of them decisions which is so subjective. It's how the referee sees it on the pitch. There is a contact. I think it was the defender definitely moved his leg across. So that's my argument for penalty. But I think this should just stay on the pitch.
Frank, what do you think?
I don't know. I would have said, you know, the first view, I would have said no, because I think it's not enough, and I think De Bruyne is exaggerating the situation. But there is a clear, as Mark said, there is a clear movement from the defender to block De Bruyne, and he touches De Bruyne. But is it enough or not? That's very subjective. And I want to go with the referee decision because it could go either way for me. Because really, it doesn't make De Bruyne falling. De Bruyne falling to exaggerate and to show the ref that there is a contact. But there's not a clear contact for me with the players, with the defender, even if the defender makes his contact.
It's not subjective to me.
Penalty?
No.
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 Penalty?
Aye.
No.
So the question, here's the question I ask myself. When the ball's past the defender and De Bruyne is going past the defender, does the defender stick his left leg out?
Yes.
With the intention of getting De Bruyne? And he does. You can see it in the second replay.
Yeah.
Does he make any contact with De Bruyne? He does. Therefore, De Bruyne is entitled to go down. So it's a penalty.
I don't think there's anywhere near enough contact. I think De Bruyne's mind's already made up. It's not a 10 out of 10 dive for me, but it's close. About 8 out of 10.
Right.
The way he throws himself down.
But he has to go down, doesn't he?
He has to go down because he's not scoring. He's lost control of the...
But he's felt contact and he's gone down because he has to show his contact.
In my opinion, the contact was minimal. I mean minimal, and he throws himself down. I think I'm absolutely happy with the decision that they gave. I saw this game and I thought it was a dive at the time, and I still think it's a dive. I'm not debating there was a minimal contact, but are we saying minimal contact now and every action is an infringement? I honestly feel that was a clear dive by De Bruyne.
You cannot defend the defender. Nobody could sit up there and defend the defender. You can't. You can't say one thing in his defence.
Well, what about Craig's argument that it's minimal contact?
I don't care. As a defender, if I made that challenge and a penalty kick was given, I would absolutely have nothing to say. He clearly has made no attempt to play the ball because the ball's past him.
Right.
He clearly has made an attempt to play De Bruyne and he catches De Bruyne. So then if you want to start arguing about how hard or how soft, the fact is he tried to kick De Bruyne and he did. So it's a penalty.
Could De Bruyne have stayed on his feet?
He may have, but he's entitled. He's entitled. If my defender kicks somebody, he's entitled to go down.
Why didn't kick him? He just leaned his leg out a little bit. I mean, it wasn't even a fully committed chat. I mean, the leg doesn't go all the way across. It's a kind of token gesture.
Craig.
Right? And he goes down. It's a clear dive for me.
The problem is honesty doesn't pay. You know, we saw so many times players trying to staying on their feet and not being rewarded by a penalty where it was a clear penalty. So that's true that he exaggerated it. And for me, he should have been punished for that, let's say. But if he doesn't do that, there is no question. That's my concern about that. Because the referee would have said, well, OK, he's still on his feet, so there's no clear contact about it. But there is a contact. There is a movement from the defender who can't get the ball, only tries to block De Bruyne. So now, Mark Klettenberg is the only referee on the today on the show, so he has the last decision.
don't give him that power, Frank.
No, I just don't think he blocks him. It's up for debate. I don't think there's any doubt he dives. Put it that way.
I think the next one isn't particularly up for debate. This was Digne's challenge on Sonny Marsh in the Villa-Brighton game.
Wow.
Just explain, Mark, how he can get this so wrong.
Because what he sees, as you can see, the referee, he hasn't got the best view because he thinks that the defender's just going to clear the ball. And what he does see, probably at the last moment, he sees the ball go forward. So therefore, he thinks that the defender's made a block challenge against the attacker. What he doesn't see is that the attacker clearly wins the ball and plays it onto the leg of the defender, which is why the ball moves forward. The crazy thing is, I can understand why referees get this one wrong. I can. But what I can't accept is the person at Stockley Park who's sitting there can't see that this is a penalty because, for me, this is the biggest mistake of the season so far, that the VAR cannot interfere here because, for me, this was a clear foul.
Maybe it's just a vending machine at Stockley Park.
What, do you think they go there?
They go there on the vendor. They're hitting the vending machine. The juice is not coming out. I hope I don't miss it.
A penalty for you? Is there enough contact?
Can we try and define this a bit? Because Matt's saying they can't get involved.
He didn't say that.
He did. Right at the end, he said they can't get involved. Is that what you said, Mark?
No, no, no. I said he should get involved in this situation because, for me, there's absolutely no debate. Because what the referee sees...
Right, right. So why doesn't he get involved there? Are you telling me that he hasn't seen it? The VAR guy?
Vending machine?
What? It depends. What, the packet of crisps? And
at the bar.
What, what's interesting is we don't hear the dialogues. And what we need to hear, and I think it'll be in the future, where we hear the dialogues from the referee and the VAR. It's important to hear what actually referee said to VAR, to why the VAR got this so badly wrong. Because if the referee said he's seen this, 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 and this, and the VAR hasn't got enough evidence to suggest that the referee got it wrong, then he's going to stick with the referee's decision. But for me, the VAR should act like a referee in these situations and clear up any clear wrongs. And for me, this is a penalty.
It is, of course, not only in England there are problems with officials, but elsewhere as well. Let's take it to Germany.
Can I stop you again?
Well, not really, because I'm just about to tee up the...
Come on, just let me ask this last thing. Okay.
All right, don't press the button.
I'm scratching my head. I'm scratching my head here. Hold on a second. So, the referee hasn't given a foul, and he's telling the guy in the VAR why he hasn't given it, but the guy in the VAR actually is watching what actually happened and can't say, well, you're mistaken. Is that what you're telling me?
No, Steve, what I'm saying is the referee's probably said, I've seen this,
right,
and the VAR's looked at it and said, well, actually, what you've seen to me is what actually the pictures are. For me, what the referee saw, he thinks that there was a coming together of players and that the ball's gone forward.
Yeah.
So he thinks that the defenders played the ball.
Yeah.
For me, what I agree with you, Steve, that the VAR should
happening and tell the referee, no, you're talking garbage. It's apparently, and have a look at it.
100%.
Right.
100%.
All right, carry on, Dan.
Oh, thank you very much.
The German thing. It's not only in England that officials are criticised, but also elsewhere. Let's take it to the Bundesliga. This is on Tuesday. Gladbach in Ashley against Bochum. Now, I'll talk you through this. So obviously, the corner's played in. It comes across in. Now, I see that movement there, where the player looks like he's trying to kick the ball. It comes to the player on the near side, and then he is adjudged to be offside, because he is in an offside position.
Just here.
Here. You can't see him. He's at the bottom of your screen.
Right. He should be played back on.
There you go. This angle's useless. But there we go. There we are. That's all right. Okay.
Right. He should be played back onside by this swipe at it.
But they adjudge that it's an accidental swipe, so therefore it's offside. Explain this, Mark.
So, what? This is quite interesting, because if we looked at this law last season, this would have been onside, and therefore the goal would have been given. What FIFA and IFAB did was, there was a lot of controversy around the Nations League final between Spain and France. What was a deliberate play? Where was the player trying to block the ball from going to another player? So what they tried to do, they tried to define what was a deliberate play. And where they came to was that, is the defender in complete control of the ball before he clears the ball? He's not. What he does, he tries to make an attempt for the ball by clearing it, and therefore he's not in complete control before he clears the ball. And that's why they ended up giving offside. And for me, this makes it more easier than we talk about, does the player make a gesture to the ball? Does he touch the ball? Is he in complete control of the ball? No, he's not. If he is, and then he goes to clear it, and it goes to a player in an offside position, then he would be deemed onside.
So because he has a sort of off-balance attempted swipe at a clearance, basically... No, I'm being serious. That basically that comes under the guidelines of not being...
So the letter of the law, this is the right decision, Mark?
It is, because now making a gesture or making an attempt to play the ball, or sticking a leg out, making a save, trying to clear the ball under pressure, trying to stop it going to another opponent, isn't in complete control of the ball. Where we talk about incomplete control of the ball, where he goes to clearly head it and he makes a mistake, he controls the ball on his chest, he puts it to his foot, and then he makes a mistake with his foot, that would then be deemed onside once he's got complete control over the ball.
So if this particular defender, Mark, just hypothetically speaking, if he had nobody around him, or say a couple of yards of space, and he'd shanked the ball, over there completely miscued it, but had a genuine attempt to clear it. Where does that fall under?
If there was a big enough gap and there was no players around, then he's, you know, he had time to control it and he's made a mistake. But this, he's trying to stop the ball going to another opponent who's very close by. Has he made a swipe? It's interesting that you used the word swipe. Therefore, he's made an attempt for the ball, an attempt, but he's not in complete control of his actions.
Well, that makes sense. So it's just English refs.
Yeah, well...
Anything
you're asking about this?
No, I like that as a defender.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You don't like it, Franco?
No, I don't like it because, I mean, I understand the law and I'm not complaining about that. I'm just saying if the guy who got the ball back, who kicked the corner kicks, would have shot and put the ball in the top corner, I would have agreed that he came back from an offside situation, no problem. But he gets the ball, controls the ball, crosses the ball, and there is a header. So, I mean, there are too many people who touch the ball, and the influence of the player who kicked the corner is not that big. You know what I mean? It's why I understand what they wanted to do because of last season we had some problems with a player who not deliberating kicked the ball. But I don't go with that so complicated law. And making football not be understood by everybody because it's getting too complicated.
Fortunately, Mark, why are you dressed up tonight? Where have you been?
Or where are you going? Where are you going?
Yeah. No, it's late. That's where I'm going. That's where I'm going next. That's the question you should be asking.
Look at his face.
Isn't it like 1 a.m. in Egypt? Where are you?
I'm in Egypt. No, it's nearly 2:00, actually, not 1:00. We've now gone another hour, so... Because Egypt don't change the clocks the last couple of weeks.
Oh, so where are you going, Mark, at that time of night?
Right,
nothing good happens at 2 a.m.
I've just come in. I'm just getting myself nicely dressed up for the last one before Christmas.
Oh, very nice. Well, Merry Christmas, Mark. Thank you very much for that. Just a reminder, extra time available over on our YouTube channel. Frank back with us. Never say that again. Craig and Stevie will be answering your questions.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Meanwhile, the Mexican national team announced their squad for the World Cup. No tour missions. Wow. There was no Santiago Jimenez. Diego Lanez also left out. Raul Jimenez is included in the team despite not playing since August after suffering that groin strain. I'm sure it will be a big point of discussion on the latest edition of Football Americas, which is available now here on ESPN+. That is it. Be sure to stay tuned, though. Extra time is next.
Ronaldo.
Yeah, a lot more questions about Cristiano Ronaldo. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you very much for your questions. Craig and Stevie here. Frank, many people were expecting you in the studio with us today. Where are you?
Oh, give it time.
I'm in Los Angeles, you know, it's where I put the palm tree. And, well, I will be with you guys next week, and next Sunday. You know,
what are you doing in LA?
Working for my sponsor and enjoying my time.
Oh, very nice. How's your sponsor going, Stevie?
Great.
Any shepherd's pie companies out there? Still very much interested.
All you can eat. So when's Frank getting here?
Saturday night. He'll be here on Sunday. When the World Cup starts.
Is that when it starts?
Yep, there you go. Oh, right. Qatar, Ecuador, Craig.
He's here for 4 weeks.
Qatar, Ecuador?
Yes.
No, magic. Only 2 weeks, Stevie, only 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
What's two?
2 weeks. And then Don's.
And then Don's. So Don's. Don agreed that he would attempt to swim across the Atlantic with his hands tied behind his back. He was using his ears.
Stevie, your reaction if you were on the receiving end of Cristiano Ronaldo's interview as a coach?
Oh.
See you later.
Damn it, never play for you again.
Yeah, under these circumstances, absolutely.
Right.
Bye-bye, yeah. No chance, get lost. Ten Hag could not be in a better position to do what he should do, and that is bosh.
Right.
So, yes, absolutely.
Craig, have you ever had a former teammate make public comments about you the way Rooney has about Ronaldo? How do you deal with it?
Huh?
So, someone in the past that you've played with being critical of you in the media afterwards?
Probably.
Yeah. And how would you deal with it?
Oh, do you mean, well, guys that I played with?
Yes.
Were a little perturbed.
Right.
Shall we say?
Yes.
For want of a better.
I like perturbed.
Phrase, perturbed.
Yes.
About me moving into the media.
Okay.
So, not the opposite way around.
Yes. You would criticise them publicly?
Well, not necessarily criticise them, but not necessarily favour them.
How did you know?
They called me.
Did they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take us through that conversation.
Short one.
Yeah, I bet.
I won't mention names. Very good colleague of mine called me at one of the games. Said he was wondering if I could be more favourable to their team and his manager. And I said, well, paraphrase.
Right.
I paraphrase this conversation. Don't ever, blah, 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 ring me again telling me how to do my job.
Wow. Right.
Goodbye.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the man that criticises his uncle.
I wasn't, I don't like that. I'm not employed to be swayed.
Right.
By former, I never was, never have been. So look.
That must have been a little different though when it was your Uncle George. I understand the teammate one, I kind of get. It must have been really difficult when it's a member.
But George never rang me and said.
No, I know, but did it not feel strange to criticise him?
Well, it wasn't really criticising, but it wasn't difficult because Scotland was struggling.
Right.
It was so obvious.
Right, you'd look stupid if you said
it. You couldn't go any other way. It wasn't a case of George Burley is a terrible manager, should never be doing the Scotland job. No. But I was never like that with any of the Scotland managers because I realised it was a bit of a poison chalice.
Sure.
You know, Walter Smith, Gordon Strachan, Alec McLeish, all guys that had managed and done well at club level, George Burley as well, the reason he got the Scotland job. So I was acutely aware that it was a player problem. And still is to an extent for Stevie Clark, but you still have to sort of get in there,
right?
With the with the
nuts and bolts, yeah.
The waders on.
I'm surprised they called you because surely they couldn't expect you to give any other.
If it was the other way around, that's what you would do, right?
What?
Well, somebody you knew, somebody you'd been, whatever.
What got me? You know, Craig is the way that he is, calling him will only be pouring gas on the fire.
I'm
sitting with my boss at the time.
You can't do nothing.
I'm sitting with my boss at the time and the crew upstairs. It was at Scottish Television, where we had the studios operated out of at the time, and I'm sitting there with him after the show having a drink, and he rings me, but he's been told to ring me.
Right, I see. Mm. Because he knows you, and then he's like to the middleman.
I'm trying to think back. You weren't on the show as much when Kenny was in charge. Do you think that maybe you looked at him favourably more than anyone else who you wouldn't have necessarily had the same relationship with?
I don't remember ever thinking about it any differently. At the same time, it was kind of... The position Liverpool were in at the time was a little bit like Craig's Uncle George. The players weren't good enough. And so you can only do so much.
OK.
I don't remember a time where I ever thought, why did he play him instead of him? Or why are they playing 3-5-2 instead of... I don't remember that ever happening. I don't remember ever... I don't remember the feeling, because I know I probably would.
Yes.
And I would have to make a decision of whether to...
But you didn't feel consciously there was a decision you had to make because of what was going on. Frank, obviously, you're international with us now. You had a French radio show as well. I imagine you must at one time or another had to criticise former teammates of yours.
Yes, I did. It happened once with Didier Deschamps, where during the first half of the European Championship, he put Matuidi on the right side, and I said halftime that he was wrong, and that he will change, and he changed effectively. That he put Matuidi back to his left side, and I say, you see, he know that he was wrong, so he changed it. And he called me after the game, saying, yeah, I was told by some friends that you criticized me a lot during the game. I said, well, no, I think your good friends should listen a little bit better. So I sent him the video about what I said. It was for the French television. And, he ended up well when he said, oh, I'm sorry, forget it. But, it can happen, you know, where some people, like Craig said, you know, some people are here to put the mess, and they try to do it very well.
And that's why you call them. Because anything second-hand is never correct. There's always a little bit added on or a little bit taken away, so you go straight to the horse and you get it from there.
Right. Did you call anyone up?
I don't know. No, I don't remember them ever. Not anybody that I knew.
Right.
I mean, criticised by plenty of people.
Well,
but none that I knew. And if I did, I would. That's exactly what I would do.
Okay.
I would phone them and say, right, hold on, what was this all about?
Okay.
I really find get stuff works well in these scenarios.
Well, yes, I'm sure.
I do. It's short and sharp. It leaves you. It leaves.
You can't take it any other way.
No, I mean, I'm really unhappy with what you said. Get stuffed. All right, there's not really any comeback. What do you really mean? I mean, somebody said to me once about, you know, doing the job years ago. And I said, look, we haven't entered into a popularity contest here. Right. You know what I mean? And there are people out there doing this job who think it is and go around waiting for the old pats on the back from people.
Right.
But come on, you can see through that.
Yes.
So it is what it is, you know. You can't please everybody.
Frank, to what extent do you look for the results of your former clubs? It refers to Stevie in Liverpool. Do you generally want former teams to do well, or do you look at it as just a place you used to work?
No, of course, you know, I always have a look on every club that I played, and I always wish them the best. You know, we are talking about our job, so I have to be truthful, rightful, and if they play bad, I have to say what I have to say. But deeply inside, you know, yes, you always have a, you know, they are your clubs, and you always cheer them up, you know, deep inside, you know, hidden a little bit somewhere. But yeah, I want Chelsea to do well because we are talking about Chelsea. Yeah, of course. And when I'm outside the ESPN, I'm crazy about them, and I can get upset when they lose games. But I have to do my job, and respectfully towards the other clubs, you know, I've tried to be fair.
Just a job?
No. I never saw it as just a job. But I don't necessarily go out my way. I mean, obviously Chelsea are high in our sort of agenda as one of the right. elite clubs in England now, so we're always sort of watching out for their results. It's not just a job. It's a lot of memories of playing with some great guys and playing some big games. But for everybody's different. But for me, it was then. This is now.
Right.
I'm not too much into what happens.
When it came to the classified results, Stevie, Liverpool would be the first team you'd look for.
Yep.
Who would be the second? Would there be a second?
All of them. Just whatever one came up first.
Well, all the teams in the world? Well, Sheffield Wednesday, Doncaster, yeah. Air United.
Absolutely,
right. Yeah, you keep an eye on them?
I don't keep an eye on them. I mean, I'm not getting up on a Sunday morning or Or a Saturday night, looking for results.
4 o'clock, he gets the results Sunday.
But when I see the result, if they don't win, I'll be disappointed.
Okay.
So, yeah. We spoil your weekend, won't it?
How long does that disappointment last?
You'll be disappointed. It's ruined my week now that Air United lost 4-0 at Dumbarton.
In the earlier generation, the senior players used to run the dressing room. What would the guys have done if one of the influential players from the squad openly criticised the club manager and board in the public domain? It's a good question, Steve. What if someone did that in your Liverpool days? What would Ronaldo's done?
Well, you'd probably be running in the Walmart and say, what the...
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you wouldn't not ask them.
Right.
I mean, stuff like that,
would he eventually be ostracised? Well, quickly be ostracised.
Well, it depends. If you're talking about people on the board, nobody gives a stuff if you criticise the guy on the board.
Right.
But if you start getting closer to the boys,
okay,
including the manager, depending on where he sits.
Right, well, this is the manager who...
So, yeah, you'd be like, hold on a second, I mean, players will always go on the side of another player, I think, if actually what they're saying is true. You know, if Ten Hag had stitched him up, the players would be like, you know what, you're quite right, because he stitched you up. But when you're completely wrong, totally wrong, I don't think there's going to be too many in that dressing room backing him up.
No, they've put this question in.
Mark Ogden has Lisandro Martinez as the signing of the summer so far in the Premier League. Haaland has had an unbelievable start, but the greater impact to their team has to be Martinez. Stevie, do you still think he's a flop because he's had a few bad games?
When did I say he was a flop? I just said he wasn't this thing that everybody's made him out to be. And I remember saying to Craig last week, you know, Sometimes you can get away with making mistakes.
Right.
I think he's got away with making some mistakes. 100%. You can't argue. You can argue with me because I will not back down on the fact that he's too small.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Right.
I'm sorry. Listen, your average Joe today is 6 foot odd.
Well, I don't think that's true.
Well, I'm telling you, your average footballer is 6 foot.
Genetically made these days.
I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll have a bet with you.
Well, what's the bet now?
I'll have a bet you.
What's the bet?
Your average player today is 6 foot.
Right, that's not your average Joe, is it? That's your average player.
Here we go. All right, anyway.
Your average player is 5 foot.
So please tell me, if your average player is 6 foot and you're signing a guy who's 5'9", then straight away you're putting him at a disadvantage.
Every time this comes up, people tweet me Fabio Cannavaro, Carlos Puyol, Mascherano.
There are players who can be that size and be great. I mean, they look at AC Milan, Baresi.
Right.
Baresi wasn't.
Does that not contradict your point that he's too short?
Well, no, it doesn't contradict my point because he's been making mistakes. And so he's been making mistakes on the ground, but the one thing you know is that he's at a disadvantage when there's a ball played in the box in the air.
Right.
And nobody can argue with that.
But he's not going to win a challenge with bigger players. How can you make an argument about a player being 5'9" or 6 foot? Because you're 6 foot or 6'1" doesn't mean you can jump higher than the 5'9" player.
Come on.
No, I'm not being funny.
I mean, just to give you an example. Have you looked at somebody who's 5'6", they're playing against a guy who's 6'2", are you going to go, well, you know what, maybe he can jump high? Come on.
But he's not 5'6".
Come on. Anyway, right.
Well, I'll give you an example.
I'm just telling you, if you watch the guy closely, from a defender's point of view, he's made mistakes and got away with them. That's what I'm saying.
I'll give you an example.
And I'm not saying he's a flop. I'm not saying he's been garbage. I'm just not as high on him as certain other people, including Mark Ogden.
No, listen, if you think he's not a good defender, but I can't, the height thing, I don't think.
Oh, God.
Listen, remember Marouane Fellaini, right? Giant.
Yes.
I mean, I'm not denying he won a few headers and that, but he couldn't get the local newspaper under his feet when he was jumping. Could hardly get off the ground. I mean, it's like...
It didn't eat.
I don't know. I think I feel a digging into a corner has come on again.
Uh-oh.
Between Stevie and Frank.
Frank, do you want to join in before we go, or do you want to go enjoy the LA sun?
No. I just want to say that I never complained about the fact that he was not tall as he should be. I think it's the decision when he makes sometimes on the floor when he tackles and goes for the challenge. I think it's he doesn't give a second thought sometimes. He goes like with instinct. He doesn't think through, and it's why he can create damages. It's why I've been critical towards him sometimes.
Okay. I'm sure that's the last we've heard of that. That brings us to the end of today's show.
Yes, absolutely.
We'll be back tomorrow.
Ronaldo?
For more. Well, yeah, not on Ronaldo. More. There's no real soccer this week.
We'll just talk about him then.
Well, there we are. That and Martinez and the average man being 6 foot these days. They've got big.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They're the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at LectricEbikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's LectricEbikes.com.